Good afternoon. Welcome to the second half of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Kunduf.
And I'm Kathy Grindstone.
Yes. I was going to say our. And we have Kathy in here with us today because?
Because I care about the youth and cannabis use.
Yes. Because, and talk about your organization.
I work for Shasta County Chemical People. We are the premier drug prevention agency in Shasta County.
But you are not a county agency.
But we are not a county
You're
agency.
You're an agency in the county.
Yeah. We get no funding from the county, but we are in the county, and we service the entire county, clear from Fall River all the way to the whole county. We're here for everybody.
You guys do all the sober grad stuff and all that?
Sober grads, Red Ribbon Week, just a lot of different things. We also, a little hidden thing that we do is the victim impact panel class, which means if you get a DUI in Shasta County, you'll be hearing from me.
Oh.
So, so we do a lot of different things. And our programs are free to the schools and to the students. And we do Friday Night Live and Club Lives. I personally work with middle school kids. I love those kids. They're amazing. Sometimes you always wonder if they listen to you, but I found out this last year when I was giving them little quizzes on drug facts and marijuana facts, and they got all the answers right. And so
they were listening.
They were listening. So,
nice.
You know, doing our job.
I like it. So how could people support you?
Actually, we do take donations. Go to our website. Either that, come by the office. Say hi. Find out what all we do.
Website is?
Chemicalpeople.org.
I will list it. I will list it right now on the page for today.
Yeah.
I don't know why I didn't. My bad.
I know.
It's funny, chemical people, when you hear that, it's like,
I know.
They must be all about drugs.
Well,
they are, but they're
we
all
We are,
about
because
things,
we also
right?
do, twice a year, we do National Drug Take Back. So we do in October and April. We usually are set up right in front of City Hall, and you can dispose of all your unused and expired medications.
Oh.
Drive up, drive through, dispose of them all. We take them all.
Nice.
Cool.
Well, there you go. So you're our free commercial of the day.
Yeah, there you go.
Put it online so you can have it. All right. So Bill wanted to get Dr. Reese started here. We know we're talking about the hole in the heart thing, but before we went there, he had a question for you, Doctor.
Well, not really a question. I just wanted to cover the hole in the heart. And then also I was reading where these babies are being born without a brain and have to live, you know, a few days. But the medical cost of keeping all these kids alive because of the marijuana use is astounding. But maybe we could talk about the hole in the heart and the no brain.
All right. Well, the no brain, that's actually an important point. There's two CDC papers saying that cannabis doubles the rate of babies being born without a brain. That the medical name for that is anencephaly. Encephal is the Latin word for brain, and A means negative, so it's negative brain. A lot of those babies that die in utero before birth, but some of them live, and most of them live only half an hour, or die in the first few days, because obviously you can't live without a brain. And cannabis actually does that for all the reasons that we talked about earlier, because it actually blocks brain formation. And, you know, the cost, the actuarial cost of a life in the U.S. Is $12 to $15 million, I'm told. And the U.S. has nearly 1,000 anencephalic, about 800 anencephalic kids born a year. So that if you multiply 1,000 times, say, 15 million, you get 15 billion. Now, I'm not saying that all of those 800 kids are cannabis exposed, but the point is, if cannabis is going to be on this doubling trajectory, I just said that the rate of cannabis addicts in the U.S., according to a leading survey, has doubled and doubled again, and is about to take off like a skyrocket, given the proposed changes from the administration, then you've got, it's like the autism thing, you've got a known neurotoxic brain that's loose in the community. I would say what's very important to understand, remember earlier we said that cannabis linked with most of the major, virtually all of the major mental health disorders. The director of the National Institute of Drug Abuse, NIDA, has published, Dr. Bolt has published several times in the New England Journal, leading journals, that cannabis shrinks the head of the baby, which obviously if your head's smaller, your brain's smaller. The CDC, as I just said, has published twice that it doubles, cannabis doubles the rate of anencephaly. And the European data shows clearly that microcephaly is associated with cannabis use. And we've got autism, congenital, you know, exposure of cannabis to the baby causes autism. So you've got a spectrum of damage, right, from slightly smaller heads to microcephaly to no brain at all to autism and mental illness. This is a clear pattern. That pattern needs to be, I think everybody needs to understand that cannabis actually damages the structure of the brain. And so that's very important. Now, then you asked me about holes in the heart. Yeah, so I'd love to just talk to you quickly about holes in the heart, if that's possible.
Sure. Well, we have a whole hour, minus a couple little commercials, but we've got good time for you. We're all right.
Okay, great. So a landmark new study published in one of the world's most elite scientific journals, Nature, Journal of Perinatology, has demonstrated that rising U.S. cannabis use is causally responsible for exponential increases in a birth defect commonly called hole in the heart, or atrial septal defect, or ASD, where U.S. rates that measured 10.3 cases for every 10,000 births in 2005 have moved among certain ethnicities to as high as 884 per 10,000 in Nevada and Mississippi in 2020, or about 1 in 11 babies affected. The study used careful statistical adjustments to show that the effect was truly causal. The findings are even more significant when it is recognized that many common birth defects lead to the termination of pregnancy. They have a therapeutic abortion because the baby's too malformed, whereas atrial septal defect generally doesn't. This means that the causal role of cannabis in this particular birth defect may be the canary in the coal mine, signaling not only the likely involvement of cannabis in other birth defects, but that these rises in ASD rates are the bellwether marker for other cannabinoid genotoxic effects, including human aging and many cancers. In Nevada, careful statistical modeling shows an exponential rate of rise with a doubling time of just 2.8 years. You think about that, every 2.8 years, the rate of ASD doubles in Nevada in some ethnicities. Across the U.S., ASD rates are rising faster than U.S. than exponentially. As one reviewer of the Journal of Perinatology paper wrote, regarding statistical analysis and causation, this manuscript has relevance to pediatric cardiologists, neonatologists, and above all, to obstetricians who should more strongly advise against the use of cannabis in any form during pregnancy. Indeed, this reviewer believes that this is a landmark study, with the revised data analysis much more strongly points to causation rather than mere association. Extremely important research for public health advisories against cannabis use during pregnancy, and most probably for paternal cannabis use during the partner's pregnancy. Other peer-reviewed cannabis population studies by the same researchers show that cannabis is causal in twice as many cancers as tobacco and numerous other birth defects in both Europe and USA. The effects of human aging are extremely concerning indeed when rolled out across whole populations, including eggs and sperm and babies. Now, that's interesting because we know that the weed ages the cells generally, but it even ages the eggs and sperm and obviously the babies that form from those damaged eggs and sperm. And if you think about it, it raises the question of the zygote at the moment of fertilization, the fertilized egg, is actually aged. And if you think about it, it's actually aged before fertilization because the eggs and sperm that made it were aged. And you can see these signs of aging under the microscope. That's all known and has been known for about 50 years. So this is an issue that the media urgently need to bring to the attention of the American people, given a heavy salience in this country on medical cannabis, which presents all of these risks to both the childbearing and the general population. This is a discussion we urgently need to have. Now, if you look at the rates, the average rate of atrial septal defect ASD across the U.S. states, in 1990 it was 27, and in 2020 it's 116. That's a 4.2-fold rise. As I mentioned, we showed the rate across the U.S. states average is rising faster than exponentially. And it's much higher in the states where cannabis is medical or cannabis is legal. Now, if you look at the height, our papers have graphs of all the states, of lots of states, not all 50 states, but, well, all the states that have data, the 44 states that have data. But high cannabis states would include Nevada, New York, the Department of Defense, and Kentucky. In Nevada, the rate from 2004 through 2020 rose an average of 12 times. In New York, New York State, it rose an average of 6 times. And in just 4 years in New York, from 2016 to 2020, it doubled from about 76 to 152. In the Department of Defense, it rose, the rate rose from 71 to 164, 2005 through 2018. So that's more than doubled in the Department of Defense, right? In Kentucky, it rose from, let me see here, from 19 to 332 from 2000 through 2020. If you look at the low cannabis states, some states have low cannabis, states like Florida, Utah, Texas, Georgia, Maryland, Minnesota, Iowa, and South Carolina. Remember, I was talking about rates like 884 and 568 in Kentucky. In Florida, the rate is currently only, the overall rate is 114. In Utah, it's 32. In Texas, it's currently 90. In Georgia, it's 25. In Maryland, it's 12. In Minnesota, it's 12. Iowa is 23. And South Carolina is currently 9. So you have to wonder about the integrity of data collection in those states. But the point is there's a wide spread between high and low states. It's tracked closely with the states where cannabis is legal. The atrial septal defect, ASD, there was a powerful paper from Hawaii in 2007 published by Forrester and Merck called Risk of Selected Birth Defects with Prenatal Illicit Drug Use. And the atrial septal defect rate in that paper was 6 times higher in the women who smoked weed. There was, remember I talked about the North Carolina group and their research on the epigenetic damage from cannabis. It's important to note that the gene cassettes that were stimulated by cannabis were those affecting the brain growth, the growth of the whole organism, heart growth, nerve cell growth, immune cell growth, liver lesions, and leukemia. And then they looked at cannabis withdrawal, and they found that the gene cassettes that were triggered with that were blood vessel formation, the hippocampus formation in the brain. The hippocampus is deep inside the brain in all the mammalian species, and it's where memories are formed, and it's very spatial. It helps with space, time orientation. Pyramidal neurons, which are some of the main neurons in the cerebellum at the back of the brain. Organismal death was triggered by cannabis withdrawal, the genes for organismal death. Cognitive impairment and learning, those genes were stimulated by cannabis withdrawal. And brain damage and damage to the testicles was also triggered. All these things were damaged by cannabis withdrawal. When we looked at ethnicity across the U.S., we found that the African-Americans and the non-Hispanic, American Indian, Alaskan Native group was higher across the country. And in Nevada, the ASD, as I mentioned, rate was double. It was growing exponentially and doubling every 2.8 years. When we look at the map of in a space-time analysis, we looked at a map of where cannabis is, you know, cannabis use rates across the U.S. and the rates of ASD, atrial septal defect, and found that in general there was a close parallel where the more cannabis was used in a space-time analysis, the ASD rate rose, except for certain Midwest states, which is another issue, because remember we said some people are very sensitive. In Kentucky, Senator McConnell, I believe, was from Kentucky, and when the U.S. Farm Bill was passed, a lot of those farmers were helped to change from tobacco to cannabis. And there's a river there, the Cumberland River, And if you've got hundreds of acres sown to cannabis, then inevitably you're going to get contamination of the water stream and the food chain downstream of the water stream. So part of the concern there is that if holes in the heart, and it's common in some of those Midwest states, Tennessee, Kentucky, it may not be driven by smoked cannabis, but it could be environmental contamination through the Cumberland River and contamination from the food chain, contamination, the water table contamination, as happening in parts of California. We know that north of California is notorious as a high cannabis grow area. It's also very high in rates of autism and gastroschisis. Gastroschisis is a birth defect where kids are born with their guts hanging out of their tummy and they have to be treated, they have to be put back. And they, again, are like bellwether markers or index markers of cannabis genotoxin more generally and of the sort of brain development and everything else that goes with it. So if you just Google cannabis and aging, there's 535 hits on the in the PubMed database. So it's not a subject which is, it is not controversial, you know, 500 hits on it. You know, we showed back in 2016 that looking at vascular age, you've heard of hardening of the artery, well, you can use those techniques to look at vascular age. We showed a 12% advance in vascular age with cannabis exposure in British Medical Journal 2016. They've looked at acute health problems. Other researchers have looked at acute health problems and chronic health problems, problems like stroke, heart attack, injuries, car crashes, falls, cancer pain, non-cancer pain, coronary heart disease, chronic health conditions, and both acute and chronic illnesses are much more common in after cannabis exposure, which is obviously an aging pattern. You know, heart attack, stroke, falls, hypertension, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD. These are all age related diseases. And then by measuring the age of cells. Remember we talked about the epigenome controls the aging and controls the cell type specification. So the reason one cell is a heart cell and one cell is a liver cell is because the epigenome controls all that. And so you can use what's called an epigenetic clock to figure out the age of cells. And using the epigenetic clock, researchers from University of Virginia and Duke in 2022 showed that at the age of 30 years, patients are an average of 30% older. And your other research shows that age, you know, you roll those numbers out across the U.S. population, it's really a deal breaker in terms of every budget. Research shows that the aging gets worse as they get older. So you know, you're 60 years old, the aging thing is likely about 60%, 70 years old, 70%. And it may actually grow faster than a linear effect with age. It may actually be an epidemic.
We've actually found a way to move dog years into the human experience. That's terrifying. We have to take a really quick break, Dr. Reese. I'm sorry. I hate to take breaks during this. We get rid of free enterprise during our show. It's an impediment. but you gotta do it. We'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Stuart Reese. You can find everything about this program, including his information and research and links, at wethepeopleradio.us. Well, on that note, Dr. Reese, Kathy has a question for you on data.
So all your data is, it blows my mind sometimes. And what I find in our industry when we're trying to research data is most people don't keep track of that, either on the hospitals or doctor's offices or any place. You know, they don't want to report out on, you know, cases of hole in the heart or how did you trace it back to marijuana use or whatever. So how are you getting all this data?
Well, you know, you're right. You're quite right, Kathy, to make those observations. Well, like Erin said earlier, you know, we work with a lot of drug-dependent people.
Right.
And that's why I started worrying about this. I thought, my gosh, if the pattern I'm seeing in my patient cohort is rolled out across the whole community, this is going to be a scary story.
Right.
So that's why we started doing our research. In other words, are these patterns... Like, I've got several patients who've got kids who've got cancer who smoke a lot of cannabis, right?
Right.
I mean, we talked about autism earlier, and one of my patients from a cannabis area where they smoke a lot of cannabis, she said, oh, all my friends smoke cannabis. All of us have abnormal, all our kids are abnormal. They're all unteachable. They're all autistic or ADHD or schizophrenic. And I've got a domestic violence order against my son who's schizophrenic and so violent and doesn't take his medication. And he's unteachable. I get a lot of teachers coming to see me complaining about stress and violence in the classroom. And now that they're not allowed to use the cane or anything like that, there's a huge issue with, you know, classroom discipline.
Right.
And kids getting out of control. And over again, it's the kids who've been exposed to cannabis or their parents are drug addicts or something. So, you know, that's why I was so worried. I thought, my gosh, if this pattern I'm seeing is rolled out across the whole community, we've got serious trouble. So what we did is you can access, it's not easy and it's harder, it takes time, but you can access data, you know, the U.S., that's why it's good to study the U.S., because the U.S. has more numbers on most things than most countries, and their statistics keeping is more careful. So there are national figures, as I said earlier, for last month and last year, cannabis use. There's statistics on those who've used cannabis most days of the month. And you can pair that with the atrial septal defect or the anencephaly or any of the birth defect numbers which are available on different databases, and you can match it all up. And then there are advanced statistical techniques that you can use to demonstrate causation, which is really what we've done.
Right, right. Yeah, because we're finding, you know, we are in Northern California. We have a very high population that not only grows it and sells it and normalizes it in our community, but to get any data from our local hospitals and doctors, they don't test for that. They don't, you know, it doesn't go anywhere. And I feel like we're not being honest with our community if we can't get this information out.
That's exactly right. And I mean, you know, what you're saying is exactly right. And that's why we're having this chat today. You know, it's obvious that the world is tangled up in lies, and we're going to stay tangled up in lies until we start telling the truth. You know, I'm a firm believer that when you know the truth will set you free. And if we don't start telling the truth right across the country, and in fact, right across the planet, then we're going to be taken captive by the lies of cannabis, which is a cross between its addictive nature and the crass commercialization of the cannabis industry, and they're quite open and proud about that. So,
right.
So you know, I think some of the things we're talking about here, you know, we're talking about some of the biggest subjects in medical research. You know, you know, things like the epigenome and stuff like that. These are some of the biggest subjects that people do research on. There's like 500,000 papers on the epigenome in the literature. There's you know, I think it's about 800,000 papers on stem cells. You know, these are some of the biggest things. That's why I said the evidence for this is overwhelming. Our only chance. See, what we haven't done is this stuff about cannabis genotoxicity. Has been known since the 1970s, right? The earliest paper that I know is 1969, right?
Right.
And we've known it's toxic to the to the genome. I've seen documents from the FDA. Friends have sent me, my American, I've got a lot of lovely American friends, right? You have to understand that, right? There's fabulous people in America, right?
Of course there is. Of course
most Australians think America is just amazing, right? FYI, right? But there are documents from the FDA showing that cannabidiol, which is supposed to be so safe, is linked with at least half a dozen cancers. So the FDA knows that CBD is genotoxic because cancer is a genetic disease, right? If we don't start telling the truth about this, then we will be taken captive essentially by lies. That's why I want to have this discussion. That's why I'm calling you, you know, from Australia, from Brisbane. It's 5 o'clock in the morning here when we started this call. To tell you this, to get the word out. If we don't start telling the truth about this, then we sort of, you know, trap ourselves in the bottom of the harbour, you know, with lead boots on. If we start telling the truth, you know, remember this stuff is addictive. Now, the definition of addiction is you lose your internal control. That's what the definition of addiction is. You continue despite adverse health and social outcomes and psychological outcomes and employment outcomes. You continue anyway. So internal controls aren't going to work. So we need the regulation of government. We have to tell the truth about this. If we don't start telling the truth about cannabis, then it will take us captive and it will destroy every budget you've ever heard of. You know, I'll come to that in a minute. We have to start telling the truth because then all these things, once, and this genotoxic, we didn't even know about the epigenome in 1969.
Right.
The genome's really only been discovered and elucidated in the last 20 years. But in 1999, they published about, remember I talked about histones? The DNA is wrapped around histones inside the nucleus, and that's how come you can fit 2 meters of DNA inside a nucleus, which is only 1 micron across, because it's neatly packed away inside the histone. The papers looking at the effect of histones on cannabis on histones were not in the 1980s and 1999. Before we even understood what the epigenome was. And now, like I say, there's at least 120 papers on cannabis crashing the epigenome, and we're not talking about it. I mean, I just checked the NIH budget is $49 billion a year. But if we're going to ignore all the research, and if the FDA is going to, you know, let CBD roll out across the country virtually unrestricted, and they know it's genotoxic, then the rest of the train wreck follows. You know, it's going to crash your, obviously, your health budget, obviously your welfare budget, you know.
We've already seen it balloon the homeless problem, and anybody who thinks that's not related to drugs hasn't paid attention to the people taking their clothes off in the middle of the street. Hey, Alex has a question.
Alex has a
little question for you in the midst of all of this.
Yeah, so I worked in the music business, and many years ago I knew someone who was born to heroin addicts, and it made him very tolerant to recreational drugs, but it also made him very tolerant to pharmaceutical drugs like antibiotics and aspirin or pain medication. Can you speak to that at all?
Yes, sir. Absolutely. You know, we've talked about this software layer on the genes that controls the genes that the scientists call the epigenome. The epigenome is exquisitely sensitive to environmental intoxicants. In particular, the stem cells record environmental exposure in their epigenome. Now, that's important. Think about the blood cells. There are blood cells that whiz around your body. They only last a day or two. So if their epigenome is impacted by drugs and diet and obesity and exercise and starvation, what's going on in the diet, in the environment, because we know it is, then it doesn't matter because the cell only lasts a day or two and then it's past its use by date, it's destroyed, you know, due to lack of interest. But if these changes are recorded in the stem cells, which live in the bone marrow and live as long as you live, then the memory is recorded. And that's why this happens. Another lady wrote to me with the same story. You know, I was exposed, you know, in utero and when I was growing up, and now I'm hypersensitive. This is epigenetic reprogramming, and it's recording the epigenome. This is what, this epigenome is huge, right? They're going to develop, I think, in the next 10 years or so, there's going to be aging treatments coming out of our understanding from Harvard Laboratory and other places in the world that are researching this. Treatments for aging coming out of the epigenome. There's going to be treatments for cancer coming out of the epigenome. This is a very, very powerful, very, very powerful genetic regulation. It's only 20 years old because it really only took off in the early 2000s. So absolutely, yes, the environment impacts the epigenome, which is why cannabis and cocaine and opiates and amphetamines all affect the epigenome, and tobacco and alcohol and aging and obesity. These things affect the epigenome. The epigenome, that there was a book once, a very famous book called Your Body Keeps the Score. Well, the epigenome keeps the score. And that's why all this stuff, you know, you think about it, it's unanimous. There's over 120 papers of cannabis and the epigenome. They're all saying, don't go there. And yet we're ignoring it. So this is why, you know, I was very keen to have this discussion. We need to start talking. It's fine for scientists to agree about that. But if we don't start to understand this stuff in the community, then in a sense, we've signed our own death warrant.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
How does it affect, or will it affect our blood supply, like people that donate blood that are users? Is that blood, it obviously would carry the same genetic code, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, cannabis is fat soluble, so it'll be in the cell membranes. I mean, it has to be. Mm-hmm. But it's not tested for that. And some of the epigenetic code, a lot of those white cells, though, when they infuse them, they're probably dead when they go in the bag of blood, and so they're dead when they come in, and the white cells are destroyed largely, I think, in the body. But that's another question. That's research that, to my knowledge, hasn't been done. Mm-hmm. You know, what happens, because we know, like in cancer patients, we know that the DNA from cancer leaks into the general circulation, leaks out of the cancer cells in the general circulation, and they can use very sensitive, not in hospitals, but in research labs, they can use very sensitive PCR techniques to look at the DNA. There's actually fantastic stories from Hong Kong, which is one of the leaders in this, and they've diagnosed cancers only 1 millimeter across in the nasopharynx through their blood signature. So this is called cell-free DNA, and this is another area of very active research, which is going to lead to, you know, probably transform cancer treatment, but we might be 5 or 10 years away from that, seeing that in common clinical use. But, you know, there is a question of, okay, the cells bust, the cells die, so there's some cell-free DNA in the circulation. What are the impacts of that, and how does that epigenome interact with the host epigenome? There is no research looking at those questions that I'm aware of, I'm sorry.
Very interesting. Okay, so before we move to one other topic, let's take a really quick break, and then we'll come back and we will have Dr. Reese as our hostage till the top of the hour, at which point we can wrap up with all the others. And obviously we're going to run out of time because there's so much to do, so we're going to thank him for coming on now, because I always run out of time, and I never get to tell you thank you at the end, so I'm going to do it 20 minutes early in anticipation of running out of time. Oh, my gosh. So you are listening to We the People. You can find all of this online. We have a huge swath of information under the tab labeled POT. Makes it easy for you. Right at wethepeopleradio.us. I couldn't resist. Sorry, Dr. Reed. Science from Weird Al Yankovic. Go figure. Okay, so what have we not... I mean, I know there's a lot we haven't covered, but
that you might think our listening audience would take home with them.
Yeah, what are they not being... There's so much they're not being told. I don't even know where to start. Forget that.
Well, look, for a lot of politicians, it boils down to the bottom line, which is always the bottom line. So I just thought I'd just make a few comments just for a few minutes on that, if you like.
Okay. Yes.
Well, all of the effects we've talked about are based around genotoxicity. If you understand what we were talking about earlier about the genome and the epigenome driving aging, you can see that by altering the genetic and epigenetic structure of cells, scientists are able to make cells age faster or slower. We can actually reverse the aging process in cells in culture and in animals by using stem cell factors. That is, we can finally tune the biological age of cells by manipulating stem cell factors on one side and genetic and epigenetic lesions on the other. If we damage the genome or the epigenome, we'll make the aging go faster. If we use stem cell factors, we can reverse the aging process in cells in culture in the lab and in experimental animals, lab animals, rodents, and things like that. And some of this research is coming out of the top aging labs in the world, including Harvard Medical School and some of the others too, and Mount Sinai Medical School, places like that. This definitely proves causality formally. This proves that this is the process that controls the aging mechanism, the genome, epigenome, metabolome that we've been talking about. Whilst there are complicating factors in the environment, especially drugs, and immune stimulation and other factors feed into this central genome, epigenome, metabolism engine, this is the central story which drives aging. Cannabis damages both the genome and the epigenome, the hardware and the software layers, in exactly and precisely this deleterious pro-aging manner that we've talked about. Published data indicates across the whole community cannabis could accelerate the biological aging rate 30 to 70%, likely increasing with age, which goes up either in a linear or quadratic fashion. Say 50% across the whole community as a ballpark. Now, the USA spends around $3 to $5 trillion annually on healthcare. AI estimates suggest that this would approximately double if the population became 50% biologically older, up to $11 trillion annually. People older than the 55 years constitute 30% of the U.S. population, but contribute 50% of healthcare costs. If that section of population older than 60 grew 60% older biologically, which is what the data points towards, then the health costs are projected to rise 2.5 to 4 times, consuming an extra 5 to 8 trillion per year.
Holy crap.
Note that this is only the first approximation estimates from AI on the current structure of the U.S. population. Our next project will include detailed health econometric modelling of the U.S. population, which is a very lengthy and detailed project. This does not include the cost for severe autism, about $20 million each, and U.S. has 4 million autistic people, which is $80 trillion over a lifetime. This does not include the cost for schizophrenia, about $11 million each if you include 12 months in prison, which a lot of them do. And USA has a million schizophrenics, which is, calculates out, $11 trillion over time. This does not include the cost of anencephalus, babies born without a brain which live only a few hours usually. Two CDC papers state that cannabis doubles the rate of anencephalus, about 14 million each. At almost 1,000 born each year is 14 billion annually, or over a trillion over a 75-year lifetime. Or all of the other 88 birth defects implicated by a European analysis. Each life lost is valued actuarially in the US at 12 to 15 million. U.S. spends around $300 billion on mental health each year. Cannabis has been shown to cause most of the major mental illnesses, anxiety, depression, psychosis, schizophrenia, bipolar affective disorder, and suicidal thinking acts and attempts. Also violence in both intoxication and withdrawal. Now, that's different with cannabis, right? Amphetamine and cocaine cause violence in intoxication, and alcohol causes violence in intoxication. But only cannabis causes violence in both intoxication and withdrawal. And cannabis is also linked with mass homicides. There's a list of over 80 mass shootings in the U.S., all linked to cannabis, almost 80 in a row.
We have that on our website. That is well documented.
That's right. You certainly do. And say cannabis causes, contributes, or exacerbates about 20% of that mental health burden, which is a realistic estimate, is $4.5 trillion over a 75-year lifetime. That's the cost just of the mental health, if you assume cannabis in a ballpark is responsible for 20% of the bill, which is probably where it's going in the very near future. And that's even without talking about cancer. You can find that cannabis has been linked with testicular germ cell tumors in journals as eminent as Lancet, New England Journal of Medicine, and Nature Reviews of Cancer. That is important because testicular germ cell tumor is the cancer responsible for the most years of life lost of any adult cancer. And there are many others, which of course is another discussion. Cannabis is now linked with breast cancer, the commonest cancer of all. Acute lymphoid leukemia, the commonest cancer of childhood. And because it's a childhood cancer, it's inherited from damage often from the parents because it's due to faulty genes. And liver and pancreas cancer, which are the two fastest growing tumors, and at least four childhood cancers, proving intergenerational transmission, not just of mutagenicity and teratogenicity, but of carcinogenicity. In other words, you know, before we were talking about birth defects, but now the birth defect is itself a cancer. So you're transmitting transgenerationally to the next generation, not just birth defects, but you're actually transmitting cancer. So you're both mutagenic and teratogenic and carcinogenic transgenerationally. And these epigenetic changes we can talk about, they're inheritable for 3 to 4 generations, the scientists say. So that's the next 100 years of our population. Mm. But please tell me why we are not talking about any of this stuff. It's been around for 60 years.
That's anybody listening to this would be asking that, like, why aren't we talking about it? But that's really the call to action at this point. Is it's our job to really get this out there.
Our job to beat the drum. And the politicians are talking about how much money they were raising taxes from everybody getting stoned. What were our lawmakers smoking when they thought that, for goodness sake?
That was asked, just so you know.
I would emphasize that these are preliminary ballpark estimates only. Detailed analysis will be prepared, but may take years to prepare.
Dr. Reese, the aging thing, just out of curiosity, as I was reading your materials, I was wondering, because cigarette smoking, that's the one thing that we see where you can really see people have aged dramatically, skin, you know, with their skin, a lot of wrinkling and all that stuff from tobacco smoking. Is that all part and parcel of the same? Or is that just a different phenomenon?
That's right. Like I said to you, I've got lots of drug-dependent patients, and the big cannabis smokers, they look like old and wrinkled and shriveled up, and it's just really bad news. Now, there's no blood test for that, but you can actually see it, and I think there are AI programs you can get with face recognition coming out of China and stuff like that. You could actually do research. We haven't done that, but that's definitely something that needs to be done.
Wow. So people spending all this, you know, I mean, besides the fact that you know cancer and all these, it's much more important than what you actually look like. But it is kind of fascinating that people are spending so much money on, you know, plastic surgery and different things like this to try to prolong the effects of aging. But you know,
and then go home and smoke a joint,
or using the
edibles.
CBD and edibles and all that stuff. So even if you're not a pot smoker, it all comes out the same in the wash, the same, doesn't it?
Yeah, look, the disinformation is so massive about this in the community that we actually need to start breaking the sound barrier. I actually spoke to a billionaire recently who's got her own cannabis company, of course, and she's putting the CBD cream on herself every night on her face.
Oh.
And she's in Australia, and she's had a lot of sun, so you can really see the sun damage. But she said she wants to using it as an anti-aging cream, and I said to her, you know that's going to make your aging worse. And she said, are you sure? I said, I'm absolutely sure, man.
Wow.
Yeah, people are actually using this stuff as an anti-aging treatment when we know it's going to make it worse. But, you know, there's really no doubt about that. You know, when I looked at PubMed database, there's nearly 740,000 references on aging, on the research on aging, it's the main database. Stem cells is 500,000. The immunity, there's 2 million results. You know, epigenetics, 200,000. These are some of the major subjects in science they're talking about. You know, to actually say cannabis is okay and it's a soft drug and roll out, that is the one thing this data explodes. It explodes that soft drug image. It explodes it, not just for cannabis, not just for THC, Delta-9 THC, but all the cannabinoids, generically, and the FDA hold this information in their own files, and we're not being told. We need to start talking about it. We need to break the sound barrier on so that everybody knows, because when everybody knows, it's obvious what we need to do. I mean, you're talking about destroying the genome for the next four generations, the next 100 years of our people, and you're talking about, you know, multi-trillion dollar health bills alone, without the welfare dependency, without the unemployment, without the underemployment, without the crime, without the mental illness. You know, it's just, the genotox of cannabis has been known for 6 years, and we're not talking about it, and that, to me, this is transformative. And certainly in England, these themes have been given a major airplay in England, and that's the reason that England is a lot stricter with it. That is the big reason that England is a lot stricter on cannabis than the US, because it hasn't had airtime in the US. But in my view, you know, we need to start showing the truth about this stuff. We need to get it out there. We've got the top, there's a lot of the top journals in medicine, Lancet, New England Journal, Nature Reviews of Cancer. These are the top journals in the world. They're unanimous on this stuff. And we are not talking about, we need a giant reality check. We need to ring those firebells and get this message out there. You know, I'm not a social media person, but we need, this is a media, social media, a traditional media, a legacy media problem. We need to break the sound barrier on this, or we will be choked in the lies that the industry is telling us for profit.
And the ones who will pay the most will be the kids.
Our children.
Yeah.
Yep. And our children's children. And our children's children's children.
Well, and based on the multi-generational thing, I think that for me was the, like, when I think of, when I see your name in our archives, I immediately think of the, when you taught us what whippersnippers were way back when, that it took a whippersnipper to your chromosomes, which was a weed whacker for those of you who didn't hear the original program. And I've never been able to get that out of my mind. So if you have somebody who is a cannabis user, and then maybe they stop, but they ultimately have children with somebody who is also a cannabis user or a child of, you start making those combinations, and eventually you can't stay out of the loop. I mean, you're constantly reinforcing the damage.
Yeah, but it's worse than that. See, like I said,
wait, that was the really bad news. There's more.
No, that's the happy news. Because you're talking about volitional direct exposure. What about indirect exposure through people who are allergic, or it's in the wind or the pollen?
Oh, yeah.
Or it's in the food chain, because the water is contaminated and the environment is contaminated. It's in your food chain. So you could be a very respectable person who wouldn't smoke or drink in a pit. But then you go to the fridge,
right,
and it's in your
that.
Milk, it's in your eggs, it's in your bacon. It's
not the bacon. No. No, I draw the line there. Not the bacon. That is just craziness. Hey, and, you know, in all seriousness, except for the bacon, the Epoch Times will be putting something out regarding the chemicals in some of our Northern California marijuana situation and the proliferation of chemical exposure there. And I think people should be terrified about that. Actually, that's firsthand.
Yeah.
I've seen that firsthand.
Yeah.
And the volume of chemicals.
In our water system.
In your water system.
Yeah. It's just nuts.
Wow.
Yeah, well, you see, this is the actual complete reversal of the drug debate, right? The drug debate started out, I've got a right to use drugs. It's my civil liberty. And you can't interfere.
Right.
You can't tell me what to do, right? Whereas now, if it's in the food chain and the water table and the environment is contaminated, we've lost the right not to take drugs and not to have kids with people who also aren't drugs, so that our kids aren't drug affected. That right has been taken away. This is a total reversal. We need to start talking about this stuff. And one thing, I mean, you know, which I've noticed is, you know, mothers care a lot about their kids, and they're also incredibly good networkers. So we need, that is a winning combination. We've got the compassion, we've got the care, we've got the concern, and we've got that network. We've got to start, you know, making those Bush telegraphs. I'm on this.
Yeah, and they are the ones who are going to be the biggest influence. So Kathy and her organization has come out really strong about all the edibles and the things that look just like candy and are not candy and all of that. So we are in the last like 20 seconds here with our friend Dr. Stuart Reese. We really appreciate you coming on with us today. I know it, I don't even remember what time it is there, but something crazy. And so thanks for figuring out how to make it happen. And we are looking, well, we're not really looking forward to your next batch of information for us, but we are.
We appreciate it.
We really do appreciate the time and the knowledge.
It justifies everything that we say and we try to teach our public.
Absolutely. So your job, everyone, go out, share the program. You can find it at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Somebody gotta shake things up. Somebody gotta shut things down. Somebody gotta strike a match, break the ice about the first round. Somebody gotta go all night. Somebody gotta dig down deep. Mean what they say, say what they mean. The way I see, might as well be.